Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Did you have a good week off from the horrendous burden of the Six Colors podcast?
That was, it's truly the, the rough point of the week. Ooh. Everything else is fine, and then you get to that Friday, and you're like, oh, God, I guess.
Friday 9 a.m., I was like all itchy. I was like, but no podcast today?
I was on a bike.
The anger of Kalendar.
I was on a bike, like biking on a trail, so mm-hmm. It would not have been a great podcast.
How dare you defy me?
Indeed. Sorry, Kalendar.
Yeah. But we're back. And there's still not a lot going on. There's some stuff going on. Apple is making, I guess, Apple is making its settlement with various regulatory agencies into press releases. That's a new thing that they're doing.
Fascinating. It is all part of this weird, I think this is them, they're trying to manage this, right? Like, you've talked about this before, is like, if you don't make the changes, somebody will make you make them.
Yeah.
And this is Apple trying to compromise and trying to spin everything it's doing as great for developers and great for Apple and just great for everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody wins, right?
Everybody wins.
You sit there and think, like, wait,
now that we're forced
predicated,
to do this.
Right. Isn't this predicated on the idea that somebody was losing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we're in this situation with our backs against the wall and forced to make a change, wasn't it because something was not right?
That's how you make a win-win situation. Dan, everybody wins because nobody wants to lose.
Yeah, sure. The developer thing with the class action suit happened last week, and everybody pretty much agreed there that was nothing. That was garbage because it didn't change anything, basically.
Yeah.
The stuff that happened this week, a little more interesting, I think. The change to reader apps lets you now link.
Right.
You have a single link. One link.
Yes.
We're at the point
one
of litigating.
Link only.
Exactly. One link only. And if for specifically signing up for or managing an account, and I am certain that their wording on this will be very specific when they eventually update the guidelines, because that's an Apple thing to do. And we'll see if it ends up assuaging anybody's concerns or just making people madder.
I'm saving my hot takes for upgrade. I'm going to give the Six Colors
cold take
listeners a cooler take than that. I'm just going to say I don't think this is a very big deal, and I know that there are people out there who think that this is a big deal because Apple did something, but I think when Apple does the literal minimum, unless you really believe that this is the crack in the dam.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that. I feel like, and I'm not going to assume it. I mean, I guess fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on you is part of the, what I'm saying here is people praise. So first off, it's just reader apps, but even within reader apps, the realm of reader apps, the idea that like the Kindle app can now say, go here to sign up for an Amazon account is a victory. I just don't see it. The victory would be to allow reader apps to do what video apps can now do, which is actually use their own e-commerce engine to sell contents inside the app. But that's not what they did. They didn't even do it where it's like you can, because there's only one link, you can't do like tap on a book to take you to that book to buy it in a web browser on Amazon. They didn't do any of that. So forgive me for not being pumped about the fact that Apple is making the, you know, bare minimum, a very minor thing that's going to allow apps that are tied to back-end web services. I mean, all it's really doing is saving the users having to type it in, and they already know they already know where that website is. So I just can't get enthusiastic about it.
I think that there is an argument that it is slightly, it at least moves things, the needle, towards slightly less user hostile behavior. But I think
while
what's
remaining
interesting about,
hostile.
Oh yeah, I mean it's not unhostile; it's just slightly less hostile.
Yeah,
I think what is interesting about it is looking at Apple's strategy overall in terms of, again, how they are managing this, because it is, you know, people are like, well, you know, Apple is wants to make its money, right? It wants to keep its profit going. Here's the thing: none of those apps were making any money for Apple, right?
Right.
They're not generating any revenue, because if you go to the Netflix app and it's like, you got to go to our website to sign up, It's not because they're not taking, right? They were never using, well, Netflix is a weird example because I think at one point they were using, right, the in-app purchase system.
Right, they tried
that. But they're not and have not been using the in-app purchase system for a while, which means Apple makes zero money off them. So this changes absolutely nothing.
Right.
It changes nothing. Apple is still going to make zero money off them.
Exactly.
And so it loses nothing by doing this. It looks infinitesimally better than it did before, but it does not, as you say, it does not fix the major problems here. And I think the question is, does Apple feel that they are essentially, how much do they buy into their own hype, right? How much do they believe, like, well, we've made this change, and this change is good for people, and everyone will be happy now. And you look down the road at the stuff that's happened both in South Korea this week, and now there are sort of rumblings that India's anti-competition agency might be looking at stuff, plus the stuff we've heard from the EU, plus the stuff we've heard from the U.S. Congress. And you're going, like, all this stuff is kind of hanging out there, massing on the horizon. I certainly don't think there are those who think this was a huge, I think John Gruber wrote this week, he thought the sound of a huge, you know, pressure being really relieved from anti-competitive, you know, legislation or whatever. It's like, I don't think that's true.
Again, I think
you have
so.
Not done enough, because the Epic is going to keep making noise because this helps them not at all.
Yep.
And you're going to have a lot of the people who are frustrated are still going to be frustrated. And the people who are the big names, where it's like, it's a web service where now you can sign up on the web. There was either the class of apps that were like, well, we'll just use the sign up system, it's fine. Or there's the class of apps who made a stand, like Netflix and Amazon, and were like, we're not going to change how we do things. People will figure it out. And that doesn't, you know, it makes it a little bit easier for them. But again, like you said, nobody's confused about where to go. It's annoying, but nobody's confused about how to sign up for a Netflix account, I think.
I just don't think that people who are in positions where they're looking at forcing Apple to make changes are going to look at Apple doing the barest minimum possible.
Right. Sure.
And say, and react by saying, oh, good, I don't need to do anything. Instead, I feel like they're going to look at it and say, oh, I do need to do something with Apple.
It kinda,
because it's
they
the only
worse
way they
too, right?
Yeah.
It's like you admitted that you can make a change. You admitted that these things are not set in stone.
No.
Therefore, we're going to press you for more changes because it's clearly not sufficient. So I think,
and I think we'll Apple see. Is viewing this entire process as a whole as a negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about this in the context of, I was reading a couple articles that they're starting to, this, I swear this isn't actually sports talk. It's more labor law talk. So get ready for something. They're starting to exchange proposals and have reports about them for the baseball, Major League Baseball's collective bargaining agreement, because it's up at the end of the year. And that's a case where you've got business interests on both sides. You've got the players and the owners, and they're trying to negotiate new rules. That's all you need to know. It doesn't really matter about the sport part, people who are afraid of sports ball. But it reminds me of that where Apple has decided it's got this strategy where it thinks that it can, you know, ride the mechanical bull. It thinks that it can do this where it rather than preemptively making changes, it's going to use each of these lawsuits and negotiation processes as a way to calibrate how much it needs to give. So, right. And I find that disappointing in the sense that I feel like, at least my take on it is, they could also just reform the App Store and do a big PR push on that and use that as the way to defang Epic and, you know, all of the other kind of critics of them out there. And instead, they're basically like, if you want to rumble with us, we will grind you through a process and give you the minimum. And that's their strategy. And that is a negotiation strategy.
Sure.
It absolutely is. I just think it's funny because some of this stuff, like talking about the reader apps, is like a link. It doesn't really do anything, I think. Whereas they could have said, all right, reader apps can be just like those video apps are, and they can put their stuff in there, and it's fine because it's just reader apps. And we understand they're different because we can't take 30% from them because of the margins on this stuff, and it's fine, right? They could have done that. They didn't do it. So unless there's another trick up their sleeve, which there might be, where there's another negotiation going on where they'll give that as a piece of it, and then they'll continue on in another negotiation, and they've got a little map, a little board with yarn on it of like all the different things right. that they're talking about. But, you know, failing that, it's just the incremental seems to be their strategy here. And so I have a hard time taking analysis seriously that suggests that this is this tiny to almost non-existent step is a big deal. I guess assuming that bigger deals are going to happen down the road, because this solves nothing. Right. So unless you're just, and I will not, I'm not going to assume anything about what Apple's willing to give up, because clearly they're not willing to give up anything if they can help it.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm worried that they will be dragged kicking and screaming, and that's a good look for nobody. Mm-hmm. And again, you wonder how much they buy into their own hype, right? I think I told when we were talking about this, you know, in DM the other day, I was saying I feel like the fact that they had in that developer settlement press release, Phil Schiller quoted as saying that the App Store is an economic miracle. Uh-huh. Felt like the it's, and I think I made this point in the Rebound this week. This is the kind of stuff that people who don't like Apple make. This is what makes them not like them in a large part, right? They have this element of hubris. Of we are God's gift to the world. Mm-hmm. And it's annoying when you don't live up to that. And those are really high standards to live up to. So almost nobody does.
Well, and what you don't want to have happen, they're patting themselves on the back. And I mean, it's PR, but at the same time, like, I feel like there's a time and a place for it. And sometimes they really...
Read the room.
Yeah, they really make a misstep. So the Korean decision is interesting. The Korean law. Yeah. Because that's... A peeking into Apple, a government doesn't need to negotiate with Apple, right? They don't. They can just make something Apple does illegal, and that's sort of what Korea seems to be doing in terms of basically outlawing mandatory in-app purchases for content, like that you have to let apps have external payment options, and that's potentially a much bigger loss in terms of revenue for Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And they like that could happen in a major market like that they really rely on, South Korea, but like it's not like if the US did it, right?
Right.
And it adds a lot of complexity. And I was thinking about it, like right now, Apple, I don't think the net result of that Korean decision is even going to be very much. Because what Apple's going to say is probably something like, you can't, you know, you're going to need to submit a separate app for Korea. You're going to have to maintain that app separately from the rest of the App Store. There's a separate approval process for the apps that are in Korea. Like, they're going to make it painful to do it as much as they possibly can within the law, because it's just Korea. And so I think most developers are not going to bother unless they're developers whose audience is primarily in South Korea.
Sure.
So, but the fear is that you could do that like in the US and then they would really be in trouble. So they can't control it. They've got to try to modulate this, and they don't seem to be, their attitude seems to be basically like, we'll do as little as possible. Unless, again, there's a yarn board and they actually have a bigger plan, which is some sort of App Store reform thing that they're going to announce. And that's why they're deferring some of this stuff, is because they're actually planning like a big thing where they announce something bigger. But it sure doesn't feel like that. It feels like this is an incremental process where they're going to give as little as possible.
Right, right. Yeah. I think that's what they want to minimize their sort of surface area in terms of what they're presenting for risks and things that need to get changed. Absolutely. And we'll see. The hits aren't going to stop coming, but at some point it's the question for Apple of like, does there become a point, right? If all these countries, if you get multiple countries enforcing this, or you get the EU, or some other large entity, where's the tipping point? Where do you decide like, okay, this has become more hassle than it's worth to maintain all these different processes or whatever? I don't know. And Apple's going to have to make that decision for itself. But I can foresee that happening at some point, especially if you get somewhere in the US, which, as you said, it's such a large market for them that, to a certain extent, they have to do stuff like this already. We've talked about the stuff in Russia, right? Where they have those like apps you have to install. Obviously, their relationships in China have required some specific changes. All this stuff. So I don't know. I don't know what makes them decide to do that, but you know, they're going to try to minimize no matter what they do.
Yeah. And again, it is their business. I know some people complain when we talk about this stuff. It's like, well, you know, it's their business. It is their business. I guess one of the problems that I've got with their approach is their approach to reader apps, for example, has always been hostile to users.
Yeah.
It's an example where Apple talks a lot about caring about its users. But the truth is that its policy about reader apps is about prioritizing Apple's financial interests and Apple's competing services over the making it a good experience for users. Because the best experience for users is to buy Kindle books in the Kindle app, like you can on Android, and buy comics in Comixology's app, like you can on Android. And you can't do that on iPhone. And why is that? And the answer is because Apple wants your money, and they want to make a worse experience. They want to degrade your experience in Amazon's apps so that you'll use iBooks, I guess. And then they take all the money from that, or you know, they take their full share from that. And that's crappy. And that is antithetical to the stated philosophy of Apple. And I think that...
Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
And so they got to eat it or wear it. They got to live that one down. Mm-hmm. They got to, you know, it's like you can't have it both ways there. Either you're a profit maximizing company who is willing to degrade your users' experiences as they have for more than a decade, or you care about the user experience and you've got billions of dollars. You take a little bit less profit in order to make your experience on your device better, which is what you say you're all about. And so this doesn't change that.
Yeah. This is the preview basically of my column for Macworld, which will come out on Monday.
Go get them.
Talks about this. This and essentially what you just said, which is at the end, the sum up is sort of like, yeah, this is frustrating because it feels out of step with everything else that Apple proclaims as its values. And that's it feels like you've lost something. And the question is, how long are you going to let that go on before you continue?
Ooh. My Macworld column this week was essentially a version of that, too, which is I'm just so exhausted by companies proclaiming things that are good for them as being good for their customers. Because that's not how it works. And you could argue that in our society, we already are in a world where companies proclaim things are good for them and say they're also good for their employees, which is never the case, right? I was watching a TV show that made the point. It was like, this helps increase our profits, which makes our company healthier, which is good for you, the worker. And it's like, are the workers getting paid more? No. Oh, well then, does it really? Other than that it keeps the company in business? Well, this is like that I used AgileBits as an example with 1Password because I do think that that's a pretty good example of them saying, look at all the ways that this new system benefits us. We have fewer different code bases to support, and so our business is more efficient, and we can spend that money on other things. And Mac users are like, yeah, but you just threw away the Mac app. Why is this better for me? And the answer is, it's not better for you. It's better for us. But don't tell me it's better for me with your PR speak. And they're far from the only company to do that. And Apple, of course, is one of the companies that will often do that where they'll make decisions that are in Apple's best interest, which I understand it, but don't pretend it's in the user's best interest when it's really just for you. It's frustrating.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. It's all about that.
Let's see. I don't know what else is going on. Again, we're waiting for the next event because it's September now. I think it's, you know, at this point, no invitations for next week. So probably week after next, I guess, we'll probably see a new iPhone, something like that. You know, who
Seems
knows?
Likely.
You never know.
I mean, we're right on the edge there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good.
Yeah. I'm excited. I don't know. Very puzzled. I don't really know what to expect from any of the stuff this year. I mean, there's been rumors floating around.
Yeah.
Some of them have been odd. There was that one about the satellite stuff.
Yeah.
Like last week. I was like, I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's seen the full picture on it because it strikes me as one of those things that somebody has like an idea of like, well, it might be this. And then you're like, that feels like only like a small chunk of it.
It strikes me as that what they're going to do is they're going to create for that just quickly an emergency mode that's basically people who are out in the middle of nowhere with no cell service where they can send an emergency message, and it's going to be made in such a way where it's not something you do just to say what's up to your friends. It's something where like you're I think the idea is if you're like out on a hike and you break your leg and you can see the sky and you've got the new iPhone, you should be able to send an emergency message even if there's no cell coverage by a passing, you know, satellite. And that's a cool feature. Again, it's a limited feature, but I think that's an interesting idea, just, you know, in places like that or at sea or something like that where there's an emergency and you can get satellite coverage to do a very, you know, low bandwidth, basically a text alert saying help or I see something or a ship is sinking or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So,
that's one. That's
fine.
Out there.
Okay, sure.
So new cameras. There are always new cameras.
New cameras and new processor. There was a rumor going around a little bit that they actually might put in some larger batteries. Which, I mean, I don't know. Fine. I'm always pleased with anything that has more battery life. My 12 Pro has been like, I feel like it's just chewing through battery faster than it used to. I don't know why, but
I mean, if you care about the Mac or the iPad and you don't care as much about the iPhone, here's my pitch. I should probably write an article about this at some point. The other reason that the iPhone event is super important is that it is almost always, last year, not quite so much, the ushering in of the new processor, which you mentioned. And that processor will be the basis for a whole new generation of processors for iPads and Macs next year, basically. Right. So it's important for that, too, that we're going to get the next A-series processor, which is going to be the, you know, probably the basis for the next M-series processor. Although maybe... maybe not, right? Because they're probably... It's looking like the those laptops that they... I think we're probably trying to ship this summer that are going to probably ship in October or November that will be essentially based on the last year's thing. It'll be like an M1X and then there'll be like an M2X or something next year. But anyway, it's the processor year. It's the new year's for processors too. And so what they announce will be relevant for everybody on their platforms.
Right. Yeah. Which is interesting, right? Cause that is a very different feeling than what we've had in the past.
Right.
I mean, now that we know that pattern has been established, it does make it an interesting idea that it's all like this is the state of the art for Apple for the next year or so.
Right. But last year they everything was mixed up with Apple Watch and iPad, followed by iPhone, followed by Mac stuff. Like it is unclear. Like we're making assumptions here, but like
sure,
COVID's still going on. Apple's still not back at their
Of stories this week about the watch maybe not making shipping deadlines, unclear. Yeah. So it might get announcement for that might be pushed back a little bit later than expected.
Right. Or just availability because they could do it that
sure.
way. But who knows?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
like their cadence the way it is. I mean, like, and with videos, I think what happened last year was that they originally thought they were doing fewer events and they made the videos and then they realized that they couldn't do that and they change the timing. And with videos, you can do that. With a live event in person, you can't. So,
yeah, I don't expect it to be any live.
So, I've got some guesses about what they're going to do, but we don't know. Like, they could go off pattern, right? Apple's super predictable and follows a pattern until it doesn't.
Right. Yep.
And right now, the world is pretty weird where they've got lots of availability issues and they've got, factory issues, and I mean there's a lot going on, so who knows, but it definitely feels like we're warming up for that, which is good, and that I definitely get the sense that iOS is sort of they've parked it more or less for the first version 15.0, and then we'll see where they go from there.
Yeah, because I mean the new iPhone might bring some features that are only available on the new iPhone, thus iOS 15 will need to account for that.
Yeah.
It's in the weird situation where it's like, you know, as I am in the iPhone upgrade program every year, I kind of think like, well, you know, the cost of upgrading my phone is negligible based on kind of what I'm already paying. I could ride out my, you know, deal and sell off that phone or hand down that phone if I want, but it's just so hard to say no to a new phone, right? When they're like, well, just upgrade your phone and it costs you, you know, whatever the $20 or $30 to do your upgrade fee and that's it. And you're like, well, that's a pretty good deal. I don't know. I don't know what to expect for either that or the watch. Both of those are things. And I heard you and Mike talking about that either last week or the week before about the what is the maturity of the watch and the upgrade cycles on the watch. And like and years ago, there was a moment where they felt like they were not going to do yearly watch releases right after they announced the, you know, released the first Apple Watch. And then it pretty quickly devolved back into yearly updates. So I think what's interesting to me looking at the watch this year is wondering about the lower ends of the watches, right? Because we've seen this sort of the Apple Watch SE and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, well, what features trickle down into those cheaper watches at this point? Because I think that's the kind of one place to watch what Apple thinks is sort of a premium feature and what Apple thinks is a feature that everybody wants. I'm still using a Series 4, and I generally find that I don't really have much on there that I lack from the newer watches, with the exception of the always-on screen, which is something that I'm interested in, but I'm not, I don't know, that alone would not get me to update from a 4, but with a combination of other factors, maybe? I don't know.
I'm not really sure. I have a 5, and I'm thinking I'm probably going to get the 7. We'll see. I'm definitely open to that idea.
There's a lot of talk about the redesign too, right? Because there's discussing the sort of it may look like the iPhones and the iPads with sort of flatter sides and stuff. It's like, all right, well, the question is are they finally going to break compatibility with all their with all their watch bands and stuff like that? I don't know, not sure. I guess we'll see, but. Yeah, it's. I don't really know what to expect from either of those. I think, like you, the update that I am most excited about is apparently not on the schedule for the fall, which is a new iMac for the high end. Because I literally this morning, as I was picking up some stuff that was over, we'd stored at my cousin's house for a while, and he's like, "Oh, while you're here, can you take a look at my iMac? It's just having trouble. It's not booting up or something." I was like, "Yeah, sure, I'll take a look." So I went in, take a look at this iMac, and I'm like, "Yeah. I think something may be toast on here. You might be able to reformat the drive and get it working again, but you know, how old is this?" He's like, "Oh, it's from 2010. I was like, "Yeah, I think it's probably time to upgrade, you know. It's an 11-year-old iMac."
All right, well, next week maybe we'll have more things to talk about, or maybe we won't, and we'll I don't know, do something different.
We'll not talk about things. I don't know. We did that last week.
You know, I'll keep watching my watch. Watch what you say and
watch your watch.
Keep watching my Apple Watch. All right. Well, we're getting back into it. We missed last week. We're pacing ourselves. We'll be back next week with more of whatever is happening. Until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.